Welcome to the Making Impact series, where we talk to life science thought leaders about their work and initiatives they're working on. We will also explore ideas and technologies about what impact are these thought leaders making in their communities. So welcome. I am Helen Konosopoulos, your host for today. I'm an adjunct professor at the University of Toronto, the Department in Computer Science, and also a co-founder at Odea.ai. I would like to welcome Albert from Hypercare to the series. I've known you for many, many years. You were my student at the University of Toronto. You were a little computer science student who was taking my course on building a startup and building a product. And I just really, this has been a bit of a sentimental show, I think, because it's really nice to see a student flourish into a founder and see a whole life cycle happen. So welcome again to Making Impact. And I kind of wanted, my first kind of question was, introduce yourself. Tell me a little bit about your origin story.
Thanks, Helen. And it's been a great pleasure to be on this podcast. I can't thank you enough for helping us get started. It is impactful of that course. We wouldn't be here doing this company. I wouldn't be doing this company and change my adult life, basically, if you think about it. Because majority of my adult life, or I guess a decent amount of majority of my adult life, has been doing Hypercare. So, and that class has been amazing. And I hope everyone takes it. Everyone who's in UFT can take it. Because it really gives that structure and that guidance for people who are in computer science, because none of them know the business side of how to run a company at all. And actually, I would say a lot of them are scared of it. So it's been great to be part of it. In terms of my origin story, and also it's great, by the way, that you also have a startup. So yay! We're all doing the same thing now. It's great.
I got a little bit jealous, and I thought, you know what? I'm seeing all my students create something. And I thought, I think this is the time. I think when you know the timing is right, you just have to do it. Right.
Yes. So, and I think so many people rush into it. Like they rush into it. And when they're not passionate about the actual problem or the people they're solving for or whatever, and they're just doing it for the sake of like, I don't want to miss out. They often are the ones who are going to give up the quickest. And I think that's really, really important. So that's great that you've done it at the time where you feel that you wanted to do it, not just because. Yeah. So it's great.
Before you go into Hypercare, I think it was you talked about passion. And you're talking about getting the right problem. You know, what were the problems users were facing in a medical setting, in a health setting? And we brought that in front of the students. And just to give a bit more context, Albert, like why you were in the class, you were a computer science student taking the course, but then, you know, why healthcare? And I think this is kind of goes into what you're working on.
Yeah. And I think that's really great context. I think what's also interesting too was in the beginning, we were exposed to so many people who were domain experts in healthcare, like the doctors and providers in healthcare. And I was not aware of all the challenges in healthcare at all. They were talking about people using pagers, which to give a background on my age, I had no idea what pagers were.
Like pagers, right? Yeah. Like pagers that you have, like,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I've never seen one in my life. And I'm like, what is this thing? And it was crazy to for them to show me, and I couldn't even find one that was functioning on Kijiji, just showing how it's Craigslist in US, how old it was. And then as I was diving deeper, I was blown away, especially so it was, I would say in the beginning it was a business opportunity. I was like, okay, this is a place where you can make an impact, but also I guess make money from it. But then when I started shadowing doctors and had the opportunity to shadow because of this course and because of the willingness of the doctors to show me firsthand, and I would recommend to any entrepreneur to really, really dive deep, I was able to shadow them, go on 3-hour on-call shifts with this general surgeon, Matt Strickland. He's amazing. And I was able to see firsthand that it was super chaotic. They're working super long shifts and people are paging them all across the hospital. They had to call people back. It was not asynchronous. You had to call them, and if they're not by the phone, you have to wait until they call you back. And it's just a whole chaotic process. And then that became a passion. I was like, I cannot believe healthcare, a place where before I went there, I thought, you know, you have one of the most educated population ever and super long education a lot of training, and it costs the government a ton of money to train each of these providers with archaic technology. That's like from the 1990s, 1980s. Using like, healthcare is the only industry that uses fax machines and pagers, which is like mind-blowing. And they don't use it because it's the best. They use it because it's so risk-averse, it's slow to change, there's a lot of bureaucracy, there's a lot of regulations. And so it's so unfortunate to see these well-trained providers spending valuable time to chase one another down in a really archaic way. It's not easy, like I send a text message, I have to call switchboard, switchboard pages them, they have to call me back. By the time they call me back, if I'm not there, then like it's a whole process again. And that's really when it became from a business opportunity to a passion. And I'm really happy for that, because if it wasn't for that, honestly, I would have given up a long time ago because of all the challenges in healthcare. And in terms of like my origin, I started programming when I was 11. I learned how to program on Visual Basic. So my parents enrolled me in cram school, or I guess now it's like coding bootcamp, when I was 11 in Taiwan. I learned how to program on Java and how to program in Visual Basic 6.0. And I love Visual Basic. It was like the drag and drop UI. It was amazing. And then that got me into website and website development, because I wanted a way to get people to download my software. So back then it was like toucals and downloads.com and all that stuff, but I also want to have a software website. So that got me down that whole path, SEO, SEM, and then I got into more websites by selling ads on my website. So over time, I amassed around like 100 domains and around like probably 20 or 30 websites, and I was buying and selling websites. Before I was 15, I paid for my own computers and stuff like that. But the whole time, my parents were very against doing software. They were like, there's no job prospect. And a lot of them are reminded by like the dot-com crash. So they're like, there's no jobs out there. Focus on school. You know, this is not a career by any means. Like, just focus on school. So every now and then, they'll catch me doing websites and make me sell all of them or shut it down. And but I was very resilient. I did, you know, they wanted me to go into medicine or dentistry or something like in the healthcare field. So I did general science at Western. But over time, I finally broke them down and allowed me to do a double major. So I was able to graduate on time, switch from a medical science degree to a double major in computer science and medical science. And since I was never confident in my programming ability, since I was only doing like a double major, and Microsoft came to Western, it was like, hey, you know, there's software engineer internship and there's also program manager internship, and I had no idea what a program manager was. So I applied for it, and my first internship ever was working at Microsoft as basically, in other places they call it a prog manager, and then I loved it. Like, it was just gathering requirements, building it, gathering requirements, telling engineers how to build it so you don't have to build it yourself. And I did not feel confident about my building abilities, and that's really impactful for, I guess, when I started Hypercare. So that's a little bit of background story, but yeah, my parents were against the career of like computer science in general.
It's interesting to see that you did come full circle, like you did come into healthcare. So that was very interesting that you went on a user journey with a doctor in a hospital, and you started seeing the pain points that they were having. What moment did you click? When did you notice that? What was the moment that clicked in your mind that said there's something broken in the communications? I mean, you said it was very transparent, but when did it really click to say, I can build something around a solution around communications and doctors and hospitals and all the stakeholders in this environment? When did that click that you can build a solution?
I think it was very nice to be able to see firsthand how a provider works on a day-to-day basis. By shadowing Matt. And then on the separate side, there was another physician, Dr. Robert Wu, and he was the site director of internal medicine at UHN. Back then, he was a department head, actually, of internal medicine. And he allowed me to interview his providers, not just physicians, but like pharmacists, social workers, all that stuff, describing the pain points of the existing software systems. And the existing technology solution. So it was pagers. And then they also had an internal built solution called Clinical Messenger. So it was really interesting to see the use case of an existing software system. So they built something to help doctors and nurses communicate more effectively at UHN Internal Medicine. And I was able to see why it was impactful and the gaps also with that system as well. And then on top of that, I was able to interview people and understand the pager problem. So pagers not only is a really archaic way of communicating, because you have to call switchboard, which is a call center at the hospital, and be like, I want to page the on-call surgeon, and they'll look up who's on call, or I want to page Helen, and they'll look up Helen's pager number and then call on my behalf, and I have to wait until Helen gets that page and then calls me back. And if it at any point fails, Helen's too busy, whatever, I have no idea. It's a black box. I have no idea what happened. It could be like switchboard forgot to page Helen. Helen's pager is not working. Helen's pager ran out of battery. Helen doesn't have time to call me back. Like, there's a million, billion reasons for someone not to call me back at all. And by the time Helen finally gets back to me and calls me back, I could be in surgery again. And therefore, we're all in this whole process again, which is who ultimately suffers is patients, because they're waiting there forever. So that's one part which made me really passionate about this problem. A lot of people talked about the usage of WhatsApp in healthcare. So majority of the physicians we talked to, they use WhatsApp. And the thing that I realized, on top of the compliancy portion, because compliance is one part of it, and you have to have applications that are compliant with healthcare regulations to share patient health information, and WhatsApp definitely wasn't one of them. But the really big gap is WhatsApp and iMessage and all these other software systems require you to share your phone number. So a lot of providers are not comfortable enough to share the phone number, sometimes even with individuals in their own department. So you basically have a small circle of people that you have personal connections with. And when you're working with them, you can get things done faster. And if we're not working with them, things just get done way slower because you have to go through pagers and everything else. And so here it was with a system that was all kind of fragmented, all broken. I was definitely very excited. And the last part that really got me, like I guess that drove the nail, was the lack of context. So people were telling me, yeah, sometimes I get paged for someone complaining or like joking around, can't find parking versus like someone dying. And I'm like, oh my God, I never thought about that. Like, this is a system that all you get is a phone number to call back. So it could be super urgent. I got to start my surgery and I got to go save this person. Or it could be super not urgent and I can continue my surgery and do all the stuff I need to do. So, and I think that's where I really, I got really passionate about it. And I think I did get some warnings from people who are in healthcare about how difficult it was. But definitely my little naiveness and arrogance was like, nah, I can do it faster. But I'm glad I was naive, because I wouldn't be doing this if I knew all the troubles I had to go through.
I think that's with every startup founder, I think, is when you realize, wow, I was very naive on this. I should have, you know, maybe I shouldn't have done this or that. Like, I mean, I think our passion as founders is to just go out there and try to solve. And I think it doesn't matter. All of the issues might happen, you know, tech, business, all the other problems that might arise, but you're going, you see the future in front of you and you're like, I can make that better. So how has Hypercare now solved this problem of communication, of one, putting things to importance so someone can say, you need me now? And then how is this making impact? How is this making impact in hospitals?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think it's important to acknowledge like the people who are willing to take the bet, the first, like the initial customers, because as much as we're taking risks doing this startup, a lot of people who are working in bigger companies who are adopting startups are taking huge risk in their career, betting on a startup that has no credibility and reputation. And so I was really fortunate that it took a while, and granted, I've learned a lot of things in the way that your initial customers might be the most engaged and excited, and may not be the biggest logos. And so I had to learn that the hard way. The people we worked with in the beginning who were complaining about the problem didn't have organizations that were set up to really foster innovation and adopt innovation. They're very, very risk averse. So one of the first few customers we had was a department in Kingston Health Science Center, and we helped the whole department communicate more effectively between the attending physicians and the residents and the nurses. But truly what was really great to see is, because when Hypercare starts expanding outside of one department to more departments, and I'll talk a little bit more, even different care settings, it's less likely that you can communicate even effectively. It might be even possible to connect, because you don't have the phone numbers or all this process that isn't in place. So at Michael Garron Hospital, they were like our first hospital-wide deployment. We got all the doctors and nurses and social workers on board. Now we have midwives. And it's been a great, great thing to see, because it's been so funny to say that too, is because people are saying that I'm going to Hypercare you. So it's like actually a verb at that hospital. But what's amazing to see is like the fast transition and how many providers. A lot of people talk about how doctors are very picky, and providers in general are very picky, not just doctors, because they're busy, they're overworked, they're burnt out. And so the last thing they want to do is like, oh my God, there's going to be a technology solution. I have to learn and take a while. It's going to be like 1,000 clicks to do my job. But the truth is, if you build a software system that's easy to use, and the way you have to approach it is like, can we build a software that doesn't require someone to read a long FAQ on how to actually use the software, then people really enjoy it and use it. And so in the beginning, when we deployed with Michael Garron Hospital, the physicians are... a lot of them were the ones, and actually there's like physician assistants as well as like social workers and all that stuff that have been telling us like, it's been so amazing to actually go into a 21st century, not to use pagers. And with one click, I can communicate my message across and I know exactly what context, I can flag the urgency. And then now, since like we have evolved as a company, they can even figure out who's on call without calling switchboard. So like I can do two taps and communicate with on-call cardiologist, on-call surgeon. And so it's been impactful to see that. And one of the things that we're doing now, which is really the broader vision, is with hospitals like Michael Garron and other hospitals, we're helping them connect with community providers. So a really good example here is like family physicians. They oftentimes are the ones who are taking care of the patient once a patient leaves the hospital. But oftentimes they're not aware of everything that happened at the hospital. And if they have questions, it's really, really difficult to connect to a specialist. And so at Michael Garron Hospital now, the family doctors in the community can just quickly text a specialist if they have questions. And they've been sharing amazing stories like, I was going to send the patient to emergency department, but because I was able to connect to a specialist, I like got them an appointment or I got a question clarified, or I realized it wasn't as urgent. And that's amazing because our ED rooms are filled up and there's people in the hallways. So more and more our deployments are like, let's solve this organizational communication problem. But once we solve that, let's help you solve when patients are moving between different care settings. And that's when people care the least amount. It's outside my hospital. They can do whatever they want. And the patient is moving between them. And they're the ones trying to connect all the pieces together. When they're like panicking, they have no idea what's going on. They are stressed out already. And so there's a huge amount of barriers in terms of communication between that. So it's really exciting. And hopefully we can do that more and more.
This is, I think the impact you're going to have on patient journeys, or you already are having impact on patient journeys, is amazing, Albert. Like, communication flows between doctors, specialists. I mean, as a caregiver myself, you know, understanding the journey for my mom, you know, and understanding the journey of that they need to go through and the amount of communication that flows, I think, until you're on that, well, I think multiple parents who are watching and yourself, like including, like we're all patients, you know, on our own journeys. The more information we have at our fingertips, but the more it can flow between all the specialists and doctors we have, I think you're going to make an amazing, an amazing impact across Canada and abroad. Are you only in Canada or are you also in other countries?
Yeah, great question. So we started expanding. Oh, and maybe one thing to note is like when we started, we were like, oh my God, we're only going to be internal medicine. That's fine. We want to solve that problem. But as we evolved, we realized, oh my God, we can solve the hospital problem. And now we're like in basically every single care setting, except dental offices, basically. Like we have nursing homes, long-term care, home care. We have palliative care teams, mental health teams, because everyone needs to solve communication. And a lot of the deployments we have is like now to connect smaller organizations that share the same patient roster as another organization that's already our customer. So we can discuss patients together. So it's been amazing to see that. Especially the community development, but we now have expanded into the U.S. So last year we landed two U.S. hospitals. Last month we just brought on our third U.S. client. So we're one of the, I guess, rare companies in Canada that has been able to successfully expand to the U.S. So it's been great, and it's a lot more competitive in the U.S. But we believe we have a really strong product, and we're also competing with large U.S. companies in Canada. Anyways, most of the Canadian hospitals, unfortunately, are not adopting Canadian products. They're adopting U.S. products because we have a challenge, I would say, commercializing healthcare technology in Canada because there's a lot of barriers. And so we're oftentimes facing the same competitors in Canada. So might as well enter their space and compete with them on their own territory. So it's been great to enter the U.S. and I'm excited. Hopefully we get to expand worldwide.
Oh, that's like really... That's really exciting. That's very exciting to hear. And I think what I really liked and what I wrote down is everyone has to solve communications. You know, and this is, you know, I know this, we think about this, you know, we use Slack, we're using, you know, tons of different, I'm looking at all my screens, that we have multiple ways of talking and discussing and information flow. And I'm really, really excited that you chose healthcare to do this, because there are so many barriers. And you talked about barriers into market, but this is barriers just in hospitals and teams. So this is very exciting. What is your overall vision for hypercare? Where do you want to make the most impact for your company?
Yeah, that's a great question. And by the way, on that note about communication, so I found a stat, and it's not surprising, but miscommunication in healthcare is the number one cause of preventable death in healthcare. It's insane. And it makes a lot of sense. Like almost every time when someone unfortunately, like, you know, dies and could be prevented, it was like, oh, they didn't communicate or didn't tell me about something. And then I missed it and then they died. And so, because nowadays, like the reason why it has become more and more a prevalent problem now is because we're living longer. So back in the days, it'd be like one doctor taking care of you. But now there's a whole team of interprofessional care team providers across all different specialties, because you are not coming to hospital sometimes with only one disease. You might be having like multiple diseases and multiple chronic conditions, because we're like 90 years old now. And so I think that's one of the things that has really evolved. And therefore, everyone who's taking care of a patient needs to be on the same page, which, you know, it's difficult in healthcare when there's like limited technology. In terms of the vision, more and more, our vision is really like, can we help connect more and more providers, everyone who's taking care of the provider, to be on the same page, having the same amount of information, being able to quickly, effectively, efficiently ask each other questions and update each other. And then there's a lot of peripheral things that result from that. So for example, when we started, we were just a clinical messaging app. But then over time, we realized a lot of the workflow is, I don't want to talk to Helen. I want to talk to the on-call surgeon, because I need to contact them about my patient's surgery. And so there's like this whole concept on call, but then the more we dived into it, it was a huge back office problem, because all the schedules are all fragmented. So we started solving that problem. Then we realized a huge part of the workflow for hospitals is also activating entire teams to respond to incident, like someone having a heart attack or got hit by a car, so trauma or a stroke, and the entire team needs to activate and come to hospital ASAP. And so we started solving a co-team activation problem with automatic escalation. Another thing is, like, a lot of times people fall through cracks because someone just didn't respond. And then you have to, like, if your patient is like, you know, decompensating and you're like trying to figure out what to do, you might have to be like, okay, the resident's not responding. I got to talk to a fellow or attending physician. And the last thing you want to do is like chase someone down when you're panicking. So we built in the automatic escalation so we can automatically call people, go up the chain until it gets to someone, which might be a chief of staff at some point if no one responds. So more and more our idea is like, really, we're going to be like an operating system. Like the messaging platform is really a platform for everything that's critical. And I would note, like, critical is really important, because there's a lot of noise fatigue in healthcare. So unless it's really urgent, time sensitive, I really don't care as a provider. And so it's really important for us to make sure that's always the case on hypercare, because if you have too much noise, people are going to start ignoring things because everyone's busy. So we've been thinking more and more, it's like, what kind of integrations can we do, like critical lab results or critical urgent results, to flag it to the provider ASAP for them to respond. And more and more, we're thinking about, like, even the patient before they come to hospital. So recently we built an integration where in ambulance, paramedics can scan an ECG, and that ECG automatically go to on-call cardiologist even before they arrive at the hospital. So they know all the context. So much of healthcare is so reactionary. They come to hospital, oh crap, they don't have a patient profile, I got to create it and all this stuff. And every minute matters for these patients, and you're spending valuable time creating all these patient profiles because you don't have the data, because paramedics had it and they haven't had a way to send it to you. So we've been thinking more about it, but fundamentally, we hope to be kind of like the Microsoft of healthcare, basically be a really strong productivity company that solves a lot of coordination, real-time workflow challenges that people have with technology. And I think that'll be awesome. And it kind of, everything builds on top of each other if you do it well. So that's, yeah, fundamentally it. Yeah.
So there was, you know, you're making these comments about how your parents were wanting you to kind of move into healthcare, right? Move into another, not software, software like software road, but go more into, you know, something more stable. But, you know, listening to you talk about what you're working on, there's passion behind it. And sometimes you can't stop passion. So what advice do you have students when they're, you know, they're kind of at the crossroads, you know, which direction should I go in? What would your advice be? What is your story around that? And what do you think your advice would be for those the future talent coming into the world, into graduating after they graduate?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say spend the most time on things that you really enjoy doing. And it's good to just audit your time and figure out, you know, if you're spending a lot of time in a certain area that you have a lot of interest in, maybe that should be your career. I think making passion your career, oftentimes you will outwork most people. It can demonstrate to any non-believers, I guess, how much commitment and grit that you're demonstrating in that. You're going to be doing a lot more research, talking to more people, just because you're very deeply passionate about it. The only thing I would, I guess, caveat is once you start making money from it, it will feel a little bit less like a passion and more like a career or like a responsibility. But nonetheless, like, you will probably be able to outshine most people if you really demonstrate that. I think it's really important to, I would say, demonstrate and firmly believe that you're passionate in it by like making sure that you're actually spending a lot of time. I think some people might have interest in things, and interest is totally fine. But unless you're willing to dedicate a lot of time to being the best at it, then I would, I guess, steer clear from that.
I think there was one thing that that it's also that your passion in building, really, I think eventually it's shown your parents, like, you know, building is also going into healthcare. You're solving a major problem that will impact patients in the long run. So I think that's kind of, that was very interesting to me, is that, you know, what do your parents think now?
Well, in the beginning, when we were starting the company, they were definitely very concerned about like me making sure I can eat well. So they'll come see me and bring like lots of groceries, just because they weren't sure if I can pay for groceries or anything like that. But at that point, I really showed them resilience. Like when I really convinced them to do the double major and I got myself an internship at Microsoft, that really helped them solidify that, you know, I think he'll be fine. But after, when I started doing the company, it's really like supporting me and making sure that I can try to take the company from nothing to something. And in that meantime, be supportive as best as possible, emotionally, everything like that. And it was really nice because actually they really turned around their mentality. Once I started a company, they never really questioned it again. Like, hey, have you thought about getting a real job and stuff like that? It's funny because I've on the opposite end, I was dating this one girl and her parents was like, hey, you know, there's jobs available at Microsoft, Amazon. Have you thought about applying for it? And that's honestly not the best thing, because a lot of times you're focused on grinding. There's already 1,000 reasons telling you why not to do a company. Long work hours, you're not getting paid as much. And the last thing you want is people you really trust and believe in, like, not to be believing you. So I think that's the most important thing. And they really did that. They believed in me. They made sure I had enough food and really understood when I couldn't really spend as much time. And they would try to make more time to actually come see me. So it was amazing. I've been really happy. I honestly think like they really made up for the high school days where they were against computer science.
It's amazing. It's amazing to hear against computer science, and it's so popular. I think you really came through on, I think, making the case, but I think the overall impact that you're going to have is going to outweigh anything, any naysayers as well. And I think the resiliency part as a founder, I think, keeps you going, because when it gets really hard, and the dedication you need to keep on going, because when it's not all, you know, it's not all fun, it's a lot of hard work, but I think your passion and your dedication and your resiliency has come through. So yeah, again, thank you again for sharing your story.
Yeah, it's a little bit of like a toxic relationship, to be honest, if you start up. It's like the days are so good sometimes, and the days are also so down sometimes. And it's like this roller coaster of like emotions, even within the day, right? So I'm sure you understand. It's like dating a toxic relationship, and there's like a small part of like obsession around the problem that you want to solve to be able to like keep pushing through when like the days can be so high and low, right? So
yeah, you gotta have a very positive attitude when you're a founder. And sometimes it's a little bit your positivity, I think, to others is a little bit delusional, because you can see that the future has something that you can really build out, that you can really solve something. And I think that's what drives you. I think the other advice you're kind of giving today is don't listen to your parents. That is very dangerous advice. How about you can weigh your parents' comments and advice, but also, you know, do your own research as you're building out your career and your education. So I think that's the positive output we can say from today, is that, you know, you got to kind of weigh multiple opinions when you're building your career.
And I also think it's like a part of it is like passion can be contagious. So yeah, by really demonstrating that you're passionate, that like over time, your parents will be on board. Like if it looks like you're just not quitting and you're doing whatever possible to make sure you're successful, over time, they're going to be like, you know what? I'm on board. I'm going to be here and I'm going to make sure that you have enough food, but otherwise I'm on board.
They'll keep on feeding you, as well as you can just bribe them with your swag from your company.
Exactly. Swag, pens, all that stuff.
Yeah. Jackets.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm just blown away, Albert. Like, this is amazing, because you're solving multiple problems from multiple stakeholders in multiple like contexts and environments within the hospital and outside of the hospital, before you go in, after, you know, the whole journey of the patient, the doctor, the nurse, the paramedic, the front admin, you know, these are all roles that play such an important role for that patient. So thank you so much for sharing your story and telling us how you're making impact in your world, in your community. And it's also really nice to see you as well. It's really great to see your success. So yes, thank you again for joining us.
Well, thank you for like getting us started on this journey. I definitely would not be on this journey. And I was not even expecting to come out of that course building the company at all. So it's been a fabulous journey. And I constantly feel like there's a ton of learnings that I continuously apply in every part of the company's progress. So thank you so much again for getting us started. And congratulations on all your successes as well.
Thank you so much, Albert. So thank you again for everyone for joining us at Making Impact. It was great. It's always amazing to hear a lot of people talk about how they're creating new solutions and new initiatives that are really changing and making impact in their communities in life sciences. Thank you again for joining us for Making Impact.